Good evening. Sorry you got to hear me 2 weeks in a row. It's a letdown. This week the shiur was titled, Who's Boss? The parsha begins with, the entire parsha is Parsha's Mishpatim. Deals a tremendous amount with dinim, monetary laws, but besides for monetary laws, it's general, many halachas of ben adam l'chaveira. I remember when I was a little kid, somebody once asked, you know, all the pictures that we have of the luchos, the very nice pictures that we have of the luchos, they look nice and even and smooth or whatever, but in truth, one side of the luchos had to have been a lot heavier than the other side. First side of the Luchais has tons and tons of words. Anochi Hashem Lekech has a whole bunch of words. Has a whole bunch of psukim. Each one of the Aseres Hadibros on the first side has a whole bunch of psukim to them. And as we know that it was engraved through and through, so you're talking about a lot of cavities in the first side of the Luchais. Second side of the Luchais, Sirtzach, Sinaf, very, very, very short. So it turns out that the side of the luchos that really beared down and weighed down and is the heavier part of the Torah, if we may say, is Medan HaMlechaver. Second side of the luchos. So tremendous, tremendous thing over here. We find right after the giving of Matan Torah, we have a whole parasha that deals Medan HaMlechaver and Dinim. And we'll try to bring out something that we could learn. The parasha begins with the halakhas of Eved Ivri. Ve'ilam ha-mishpatim ha-shatatsim l'freyem, ki sikne Eved Ivri, she'shonim yavid v'shliyas yesil l'chav shichinam, in begapa yovi, begapa yetze, in balisho, hu v'yotza ishto imoy. So we know that if the Eved Ivri is sold, either because he stole, or he's selling himself just because he's poor and he doesn't have money. So Bezdin sells him, or he sells himself as an Eved Ivri. If he's single, Begapa Yavli, Begapa Yetze. And if he goes in as a married man, V'yotza Ishta Imoy. Rashi says, V'yotza Ishta Imoy. His wife goes out with him. Since when did his wife go into slavery with him? We're all familiar with what Rashi answers. That we learn from this pasuk that when a master purchases an Eved Ivri for himself, he has to take on the support of the Eved's entire family. Wife, kids, besides the buying the Eved and paying for him, he also has to then go and provide food, shelter. He's got to provide and give full support to the Eved's family so long as the Eved is working for him. Rosh Hashiva of Shmuel Birnbaum and Zatzal asked the question over here. He says, why does the pasuk have to speak in riddles? Why does it have to be vague? In begapa yovi begapa yetzei vim balishu v'yotze ishtayimai. His wife goes out. Tell me if he's married that you're supposed to support his wife. Why speak about it in the shalila, in the absence? When it's time to go out, you're not going to pay for his wife anymore. Tell me l'chatchila, when you buy the Eved, there's a chiv to support his wife and family. Very simple. Psukim continue. Speak about Ritzia. Eved says, I love my master, I love my wife, I love the situation that I'm in. Haftias, Adoini, Asishti, Asbana, Ilayeti, Chavshi. So we go and we bring him to the doorway and we drill a hole through his ear by the doorway. And he stays there till Yovel. Pasuk then continues and speaks about a girl. A father is not doing very well and he needs some extra cash. Family's impoverished. And he goes heartbreakingly and he sells his daughter as a maidservant. Pasuk says about a maidservant, Loi say take it, say so avodin. She does not go out like the way slaves go out. She goes out either with 6 years of slavery. She goes out when she becomes a naira. She starts reaching puberty. She leaves for free. She doesn't have to redeem herself and pay herself out. She doesn't go out like the way slaves go out. So Rashi, what does it mean she doesn't go out the way slaves go out? Slaves, meaning a real goyish slave in Eved Kanani. If you knock out his eye or you knock out his tooth by mistake, the Eved goes out for free. The Eved Kanani gets his freedom. But a girl that's a slave, a Jewish maidservant, or an Eved Ivri, we learn out the same halacha. If you knock out an Eved Ivri's tooth or eye or any other of the Rashi Evarim, a finger, you break his toe off, any of these things, Eved Kanani goes out with that, but not an Eved Ivri. And again, the Roshiva Zatzal asked, why does the Pasuk have to speak in riddles? Why are you telling me he doesn't go out the way Eved Kanani goes out? And then figure out, well, how did Eved Kanani go out? They go out if you knock something off the body. Oh, they don't go out this way. Just get to the point and say, they don't go out B'Rashi Evarim. They don't go out B'Shem Vayim. Straight to the point. Why does he have to leave it for us to figure it out? Of course, the Torah wants us to be Lamdanim and everything, but that's for the Gemara. Let the Pasuk just say, Lai Seitzei B'Shem Vayim. Very simple. Then comes the mitzvah of Yud. One of us. And as going to high school and learning about Yud and the Sechus Kedushin, such a strange mitzvah. You go and you're taking this girl into your house as a maidservant. She's sitting there doing your dishes, cleaning the floor, and the Torah gives the master a mitzvah to marry her. What a strange mitzvah. Mitzvah to marry a Jewish maidservant. You marry somebody that's appropriate for you. There's a special mitzvah. You're taking a maidservant to marry her. What's the pshat of the mitzvah? There's one more point that I decided to give the title to the shir for. That was, who's boss? Why do we do a tzi on the Eved? We take his ear, we go to the door, and we drill his ear. Mara says, Rashi brings it down over here in the pasuk. Omer Hakadosh Baruch Hu, Oizen Sheshama Koili Al Asinai B'Shoa SheAmarti Ki Li B'nei Yisrael Avodim V'Lay Avodim LaAvodim. The ear that heard on Har Sinai that Klal Yisrael are my servants, are my slaves. V'Lay Avodim LaAvodim. They're not slaves to slaves. And this guy went and he got himself another master between me and him. There's not supposed to be anybody between I, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and Klal Yisrael. And this guy went and selected a master for himself besides for me, an Eved L'Avodin. Oh, we're going to take that ear and drill it. Yirtza, we drill his ear, teach him a lesson. There's a question we all ask. That is, why are we waking up now? If we've got an issue with an Eved Ivri taking upon himself a new master, then we should do it with when he starts his avdus. As soon as an Eved decides to sell himself on the slave block, right away, the way to get him as a slave, pay him the money and drill his ear. You need the money, we understand, but you should know this is a pretty lowly thing for you to do. What are you going and looking for? A new master for yourself, putting yourself, taking a step down in your status, and Eved L'Avodim, drill in there right away in the beginning. What are we waiting till after Shei Shonim, after 6 years, and he doesn't want to leave? Then we drill his ear. Secondly, we see over here the Gemara says, Rashi brings it down, that an Eved is called, he's acquiring a master for himself. And yet, we know the reverse is also true. Gemara says that the way we treat an Eved Ivri, the Pasuk says, Imach, Imach, Imach. Everything, he has to be good with you. What does it mean, good with you? It means you have to treat your Eved Ivri unbelievably. You have to give him the same type of food, the same quality mattress, the same pillow, the same coat, every single thing that you have that's pleasurable to you, you can't treat him with a lower status than yourself. You're going out to a restaurant, you take him with you. You get yourself, you know, the most expensive dish, he gets the same thing. If there's only one, he gets it and not you. You have to treat him mamish like a king. And therefore the Gemara says, Kol hakoina Eved Ivri, whoever buys himself an Eved Ivri, kikoina odoin la'atzmai. He's buying a master for himself. So who's boss? on the Eved Ivri, we're coming over to him, we're giving him patch, we're drilling his ear, because you took a master for yourself. And then we turn around to the master and we say, you're buying an Eved Ivri. You know what you're doing? You're buying yourself a master. Who's the boss? Who's the master? Is the purchaser, the buyer, is he the boss? Is he the Adain? Or is the Eved the Adain? Who do we look at as running the show? A master goes and buys an Eved, that's it. He is subjugated to his own servant. He's going to tend to him, take care of him. If his servant gets sick, there's no 6 days and just not think about him for a few days. He has to go and take care of his servant. He's got to tend to his servant in bed, bring him a tea, make toast for him, take care of his slave. He mamish takes into his house a new master. So we're telling the Eved that he's selling himself and accepting a master. Who's the master? Seems like a stira in the Lashon of Chazal. Later on in the parasha, Kadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu a nevuah that unfortunately, sadly enough, one day Klal Yisrael is going to sin. Sounds surprising, but it's going to happen. And when Klal Yisrael sins, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to have to remove his Shechina from Klal Yisrael. There's not going to be a Mishkan or a Beis HaMikdash. And instead, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to send a Malach Lefanecha. There's going to be a Malach to guide Klal Yisrael. This was after the Egel. Hashem sent a Malach. And then Moshe Rabbeinu davened for Hashem to bring back the Shechina and build a Mishkan. But there was a Tekufa where there was a Malach by the Amud HaAnan instead of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And Hashem says as follows, Yishomer mipon, be careful with this Malach. Ushema b'kailai, and listen to everything he says. Al tamer boy, don't rebel, don't go against him. Ki lo yisa lefeshacha, he's not going to carry your sins like I do. I'm patient when you guys do averus. I'm moichel when you guys do averus. But if this Malach is going to be guiding you through the Midbar, and you guys do something wrong, he doesn't go for garbage. He's not going to take any of this lightly. And you do an Aveira, he's not going to have patience. So Rashi, why not? Rashi gives two pshatim, we'll speak at one. Rashi says, Hilo yisal efishaka. He's not going to carry your sins, he's not going to be patient with you. So Rashi, not because he's mean and nasty. Malach not mean and nasty. So Rashi, you know why? Einoy melumad v'kach. He's not accustomed to forgiving, forgetting, and being patient with sin. You know why? Shehu l'nat kat she'einon chaitim. He's from these types that don't sin. Malachim don't sin. Sin to a Malach is unimaginable. Avera, a chet. And he's not used to being able to accept that sin can exist. I'm a Kadosh Baruch Hu, I'm all capable, I could do anything. Somebody could be the biggest Rasha in the world and I could have Rachmanis on him. I could be Mavri Al Midoisa. Why are we Michael so easily? Sometimes somebody wrongs us. Something bad happens, somebody's really, really doing something improper. What gives us the capability of being Michael? It's not because we're nice. So Rashi, you know why? Because we do it for ourselves. We know that we have our own shortcomings and we're Michael ourselves for it. We know that we're not so perfect and we have to deal with ourselves when we're not so perfect. So we're used to forgoing sin. We're used to being Michael ourselves. The Mela, when we're exposed to somebody else doing something wrong, we're already used to, washing things over. It's easier for us. But for Malach, sin is just unimaginable. And if Klal Yisrael does an Aveira when the Malach is guiding them, they're going to be in big trouble. I'm thinking a very interesting thing. A Malach, we can assume, is a lot higher than we are.
can't the Malach look at us objectively and say, yeah, of course, sin, sin, sin. But look at these guys, like we say in the Yom Kippur Slichais, they're nothing, they're from the dust of the earth. Kitzitz Noivel, like this, like a leaf on a tree that's withering away. What's a human? A human is so small, so finite, so incapable, so easily swayed. So of course they're doing Averis. Even if the Malach himself is not used to Averis, can't he look at us? Can't he look at us and objectively, good, I'm a Malach. They're humans. I can understand if a Malach can't stand another Malach doing Averis. That we can all hear. But the Malach can't stand a human doing an Avera. A human's a human. That's all we are. I think what we see from here is a tremendous lesson. And something called the theory of relativity. We're not going to apply Einstein's theory of relativity. But I believe that in this parasha, the parasha is teaching us that there's more than just a theory of relativity, there's a law of relativity. If a Malach cannot look at us objectively, and he's only looking at us measured against himself, I don't do sin, how could you sin? If a Malach can't look at us objectively, can we look at each other objectively? A Malach is a lot better than us. But a Malach is going to see us humans relative to himself. Sin can't exist. I don't know. I don't know how to deal with sin. How could you guys sin? And he'll schmeiß us. He'll wipe us out. Because he can't deal with sin. We're humans. Come on. Fix your glasses. Can't you see? We're humans. No. He looks at everything relative to him. And the Torah is telling us that we are the exact same way. If a Malach is incapable of looking at things objectively, it's all subjective and related to himself. Kol Shekein. We ourselves, we look at each other through very, very blurred vision. And we see each other only relative to ourselves. Meaning. Like a mailman. Guy delivers your mail. Who is he? He's your mailman. No, if you're a real Baal Chesed, a very kind, gentlemanly fellow, you might actually know something about your mailman's personality. You might know his name. You might notice if he was off one day and was sick and somebody else had to substitute for him. Especially when they mix up your mail. But Bederach Klal, this is a person that we look at as a serviceman. He exists, from my point of view, as just being this guy who delivers mail for me. Almost as if he's not human. He's a robot. He's nobody. He is a guy who's in service to me. Plain and simple. I don't know anything else about him in terms of his being an actual human. A human with personality and feelings and health and a family. And happy times and good times and moods. What? He's the guy who sticks mail in my box. That's all he is. And the truth is, that's how we look at everyone around us. Everyone around us. We have a way of looking at everybody as how they relate to us. And that's it. Zehu. Nothing more. So the Torah is unbelievably sensitive. And you go and you buy yourself an Eved. And he's an Eved Ivri. And how do you look at him as an Eved Ivri? You're my slave. I'm your boss. You do what I say. You're a nobody. And the Torah brings to us such an unbelievably beautiful awareness that no, he's not just your slave. He happens to also be your slave. But he's another Yid. He's another human being. He has feelings. And not only does an Eved Ivri have feelings,
He has pride of a free man. And for the Torah to blatantly say that when the Eved is sold, the master goes and supports his family, that's a busha. It's an embarrassment. It's an insult. The Eved doesn't want everybody to know that he's being totally supported even after he's been bought. He's been bought as a slave. And even more than that, he's not relying on tzedakah. His master is feeding, clothing, and taking care of his whole family. How embarrassing. What a low step to stoop down to. He's got to do it. He's got to do it. He doesn't have money. Abazak the Eibishter, he has pride just like every free man has pride. And it's an insult. It's embarrassing and it hurts. And the Torah is not going to say openly that we support his family. We'll hint to it. We'll hint to it very vaguely. When he leaves, you no longer are supporting his family. But we're not going to say blatantly out in the open, as soon as the Eved comes in, you're supporting. People shouldn't notice, people shouldn't know, and the Eved shouldn't feel that it's out in the open. Similar to that, the Pasuk says, Vayter, that when the Torah says that an Eved does not go out, b'shein v'ayin, an Eved doesn't go out if you chop off a finger or knock out his eye or tooth, it doesn't say he doesn't go out like that. The Torah says he doesn't go out like an Eved, because he's not like an Eved. He's a human being with pride. He goes out like a mensch. He gets bought. He could be redeemed. He could buy himself out. Or he serves his term to the end. He's not just thrown out, oh, I knocked off your fingers. We're going to, you know, it's just like an Eved Kanani, you know, me, you. You are not like a regular slave. You have a higher status. And you're not going to go out like a regular slave either. You live on a more princely status even as a slave. You hire a maidservant. You buy a girl to wash your dishes and clean the floor and do your clothing. How do you look at her? You know what used to go on in America when people had slaves? A slave was hefkel as nus. The master was in a bad mood one day. He comes home with a little taiva and then boom. It was a davar pasha that a woman slave was enslaved to the master's tightness as well. A maidservant is nothing. Sakta Ibrish, do you like her? You like her? She's not a maid. She's not just a slave and a servant. She's an eligible kalamadal. Marry her. Sheirak susava inasa layigra. Don't look down at her like a maidservant. You're right. You hired her. She's working for you. She's making money. You could tell her what to do in terms of the housework. But that doesn't define her personality as being a lowlife, as being just a fixture for your taiva. Adarabba, it's a mitzvah. She's coming from a downtrodden, underprivileged family. Her father had to sell her because they didn't have food to put on the table. Adarabba, take her in and make her your queen. This woman who was doing your dishes and cleaning your floor, you like her? No, don't like her just for your titles. Make her your queen. Take her as your wife. It's a mitzvah to take this girl who was a maidservant and bring her up such a massive notch, and because that's who she really is. She's not a maidservant. She's a human being. She's an eligible kalamadal. She's Aaron Shaduchim. She glad that works for you. This is how the Torah views the human being. Don't look at her just through your eyes. Look at her for her own value. Brings us back to the question of who's the master? Who's really the boss? Unbelievable. This goes so right. The Eved if he knows the halachas. Why does the Torah wait when he's there 6 years and he does ritziah? Then you say you're being kind and adin la'atzmacha. You know why? Because when the Eved first goes into servitude, he's not getting a master for himself. You know what he's doing? He's making himself a master. He's becoming king of the palace. That foolish guy who actually bought an Eved Ivri is subjugated to his slave.
The Eved Ivri who sells himself becomes the master of the home. Fakat, he lives on an equal status as his master. Perhaps even better. Eved, initially, when he sells himself as an Eved, he was not Kaina Adon La'atzmai. Fakert, the purchaser was buying a master for himself. Kala Kaina Eved, Kiilu Kaina Adon La'atzmai. But after 6 years, and the Eved comes to a point where he's addicted to living with a leader. He's addicted to having somebody else run the show and support him and lead him and guide him and telling him what to do. And he gets used to that lifestyle. He becomes ice. He's bottle. He's not self-supportive anymore. Hitaka loses his own identity after 6 years. At that point in time, the Ibishta says, you want to continue after 6 years? That means you lost your own leadership. Now is the time when you are actually taking a master for yourself. But not at the time when you first became an Eved. So you hear this? You have an Eved who's going into slavery, and he's looking at it through his eyes. At first, when he sells himself, he doesn't see himself as being a slave. When he first sells himself, he looks at his boss and says, you know what? Fakert, he's working for me. He's my wholesaler. The wholesaler looks at the retailer. He's just a retailer. He's my buyer. What is he? I'm the supplier. The retailer is looking at the wholesaler. You're just a chefta. I just need you around for my business. Each of them are looking at each other as the, you're just the guy who's servicing my needs. The supplier looks at the retailer as the one who's funding him. And the retailer looks at the supplier, the wholesaler also, as the one who's funding him. Each one looks at himself as being the center of attention, and the other one is just somebody that I can use. The Eved going into slavery doesn't even see himself as a slave. He sees himself as going into a situation where he could make use of a master. That's what he's doing. I'm going into a situation where I'm going to be equal to the master. How can I make use of him? Well, he's going to be buying me for cash, plus he's supporting my family, and if I get sick, oh boy, is he going to really take care of me. Got the best health insurance in the world. He's not looking at the master as a master. He's an employer. He's the one that's giving me my parnasa. I'm the boss, and he's just a pawn in my hands. That's how we all look at things. We all look at everyone around us. How can I use you? How are you useful to me? I am the center, and it's human nature. I don't think that we're capable of avoiding this entirely. Perhaps we're capable in some amount. But we always are going to look at people relative to ourselves. So the question is, if this is such a part of our nature, we're looking at everyone relative to ourselves, a theory of relativity, in an unbelievable fashion. Everything is just relative to me. What does the Torah want us to do with this? I'll give you an unbelievable story. I saw this in Pesach Krohn's book, just Agav, from a personal vantage point. I happen to know the Yedia Brura, Pesach Krohn's stories. I verified from many, many angles. My father one time supplied Pesach Krohn with the story, and he said afterwards he had charata, because he called up Pesach to give him the story. And for the next 2 months, Rabbi Krohn was calling up my father, asking him for the slightest, tiniest details, and who else he could call to verify the different details in the story. From five, his stories are very, very true. Not just storybooks. Unbelievably true, true stories. So there was a chassan who was getting up by his shavuot brachos. We'll name him Yitzi. Yitzi's getting up by his shavuot brachos. He's talking to the crowd. He's a real ben Torah. He's going to Kollel and a fine mensch and everything. And he says a dvar Torah and he thanks the guests and he and her. And then it gets quiet for a moment. And he says, you know what? I wasn't planning on doing this. But I feel that at this turning point in my life, this new milestone in my life, I feel I have to express the Hakaras HaTov. to a certain Rebbe of mine who changed my entire path of life. This goes back to fifth grade. There was a boy in class by the name of Naftali. Fifth grade, 10-year-olds. Naftali's grandparents had bought him a beautiful new watch that he was so proud of, and mamas a show-off, and he came to class showing it off to everybody, and he made sure to tell everybody, my parents said I'm not allowed to bring it to yeshiva because it's such an expensive watch. And everybody's eyes, you know, googling over it, you know, wow, you know, the fancy watch. And lo and behold, recess time, Naftali went, and he was concerned that during the ball game, his very nice, expensive new watch might get ruined. And he put his watch down in his desk, and he went up to recess with the rest of the boys. And as can be expected by any adult, but not by this little innocent Naftali, when he came back from recess, it wasn't there. Naftali's crying and screaming and yelling, and his parents are going to kill him. They warned him not to bring it to yeshiva. It's going to be terrible. Rebbe, what should I do? He's going crazy. And the Rebbe knew he has to do something about it. And the Rebbe was outside the room the entire time during recess. He let all the boys out during recess. And he had been schmoozing in the hallway with another Rebbe. And no other boys from any other classrooms went into the room during recess. A very, very focused local detective work that was needed. No big deal. So when everybody came back into the classroom, the Rebbe announced, as the boys are aware, something happened to Naftali's watch. Could be somebody by mistake took it. Somebody wanted to borrow it. Somebody wanted to look at it. I'm asking everybody, nothing wrong, just cough it up. Life will go on further. I'm giving you an opportunity. Give it up. There's nothing wrong. And we understand you wanted to look at it, but now it's time to give it back. No answer. The class is quiet, silent, not a word. Nobody's getting fidgety. You know, the telltale signs, you know, the eyes darting around. Nothing. Mamish. Rebbe says, okay, we're going to have to do something a little more drastic. Every single boy is going to line up against the front wall of the room with their heads facing the wall. And nobody's allowed to turn around. And I'm going to go down the entire classroom, every single boy, and I'm going to frisk them, check their pockets, and we're going to get the watch back. And at this point, our friend Yitzi, he says, I was that boy. And at that point, was I starting to turn red, my ears were getting hot, and I was schwitzing, and my heart started palpitating, and I didn't know what I was going to do with myself. And the Rebbe makes the line up, and all 32 boys get up there by the wall, and the Rebbe instructs them very carefully and very sternly, nobody is to turn away. Face the wall. We're going to go through every point in the class. And the Rebbe goes, and Yitzi says, I was boy number three. I was the third boy. And the Rebbe goes up to the first boy, and he puts his hands in his pockets, and he's feeling it, you know, all around. And he goes to the next boy, the second boy, and Yitzi's going crazy. He's going to melt through the floor. And the Rebbe goes to the second boy, and he comes over to Yitzi, and he's frisking his pockets, and out goes the watch from the back pocket of Yitzi into the Rebbe's pocket. And then you know what the Rebbe did? He went on to the fourth boy. And he went on to the fifth boy. And to the sixth boy. And to the seventh boy. To the eighth boy. To the ninth boy. And he went through the entire class, frisking everyone's pockets. And the Rebbe did not say a word to me. That's what it means. Chvoid Talmidcha Chaviv Kishalach. How thoughtful was this Rebbe of this little ganav's feelings. Absent-mindedly, the Rebbe just could have stopped it. You know, he planned it out so carefully. No one should know who took it. Yitzi said that had such a profound effect on me. It changed my course of life, and I said, one day, I want to be a Rebbe like him. That's the appropriate way that we should look at the people around us. The people that are subjugated to us. The people who are powerless around us. The people that we have control over. We could look at them as just being pawns. Nothing. Not recognizing their feelings. Not recognizing their individuality. Or we could recognize them as human beings. As princes. Yitzchak Kutner said that, why does it say the place where we find this hinted to in the Torah that a person should respect his Talmidim as like himself is by Amalek. Coming towards Purim, we get a little introduction over here. By Amalek it says that Moshe Rabbeinu said to Yeshua, Bechar lonu anoshim, let's choose people, let's choose men to fight the war against Amalek. And there Rashi says, Bechar lonu, you speak to Yeshua, we, us, on equal level, mikan, sot Rashi, that a person is supposed to respect his Talmud like himself. Factor of Hutner, what's that is specifically in the parsha of Amalek? Did Chazal decide, did the Torah decide to teach us this lesson? And he answered a beautiful parent. What did Amalek do? Amalek went up to the people who they felt were weak, tired. Va'ata oyeif v'yogeya. Klai Yisrael was tired and weak. They just left Mitzrayim. They were in the Midbar. And they, who did they attack? Hanechasholim acharecha. Amalek attacked the weaklings of Klai Yisrael. The weakest of Klai Yisrael. They didn't hold a brave war against Klai Yisrael's warriors. Those that the Shekhinah, that the Amud HaOnan was pilot, the sinners of Klai Yisrael, so Mamela they were shvach and didn't have protection, those are the ones Amalek harped upon and jumped upon and attacked. Zotav Yitzchak Kutner, Amalek was setting a precedent. Take advantage! Somebody's beneath you, powerless against you, take advantage! You don't have to have any reason to. They're under your power. Use it. That was Amalek. And that's why Zokter Yitzchak Kutner, that's why the Pasuk says, Melchemes Hashem Amalek Dor Dor, from generation to generation. Zokter Yitzchak Kutner, because the thing that detaches the Messiah of Torah, the thing that detaches one generation to the next is, you know what? When the older generation looks down at the new generation, at the younger generation, at the Talmidim, at the children. They look down at them. We're the leaders. We're the powerful ones. And who are you? That kills the Messiah. Can't expect to give Torah over to a class if the Rebbe looks down at the Talmidim. Can't. But that's what Amalek was trying to plug into Klai Yisrael. Look down at the weaklings. And the Eibishter says, Fakert. This is the parsha that we're going to teach the world. Yehei chaviv tzvayd talmidcha kishalach. The covet of your talmid should be equal to yours. Fakert, we don't look down at the people below us. Just want to give a few quick practical examples. A wife. How do we look at a wife? She's our slave, no? She cooks, she cleans, takes care of the kids, does homework. She's there for us when we come home at night. There's no, she makes Shabbos, everything. To a certain level, we all feel that way. It's natural for a person to look at everyone around them as being just a tofel, and how I can use you. What do I get out of you? Are we making use of other people? or are we serving other people? Chazal tell us with our wives, you're supposed to love her kegufach, just like yourself, and you're supposed to be mechabed her, honor her, respect her, yoyser migufach. Your wife is not your maid. Your wife is your queen. Our kids. What's a kid? A kid is a nachas machine. Push a button, get nachas. He didn't give you nachas? Push harder! He's not giving you nachas? Push harder! Push a different button. He's a nachas machine. What use is he if he's not giving me nachas? What do you mean? He's a human being. And if he happens to give you nachas, it's wonderful. And if he's not giving you nachas, what's the difference than if he's another stranger in the street? He's a human being. He's subjugated to your desire for nachas. We all love nachas. But your child is not a nachas machine. He's not in servitude of you. And you are not here to make use of the pride that you get out of your child. He's another human being, and he has his downfalls, and he has his successes. And when he has a downfall, he's not giving you nachas, and too bad on you. Talmidim. Always tied to the teachers in school. A lot of times, they don't, English teachers specifically, they usually don't get the proper respect that the principals would love them to get during English. There's a number of reasons for it. But I believe one of them is, at least this is the way I remember I was feeling, is that a lot of these teachers walk in with the feeling of, you're not my students. You're my subjects. For this 45 minutes, I'm the ruler of this room. I'm king. You're my subjects. I'm not teaching a subject. Yeah, I'm teaching a subject. You're my subject. And that's felt. The kids feel that. They feel the teacher looking down at them. But Derech Klal and Limud Kodesh, you don't feel that that much. Because Rabbein recognized the value of the future generation of Klal Yisrael. That's our Rabbein. They see the future of Klal Yisrael in their students, and they respect them. They value them. Ron, the Shmuel Birnam itself, very often used to say, Ich bin an Eved zu de Talmidim. I'm a slave to my Talmidim. If you guys all make up to learn some any part of anything you want to start learning, Parsha, I'll teach you Parsha. Anything. I am subjugated to you. A real Mechanech understands that the children that are sitting in front of him are the next generation of Kaisa. And they respect them for that. They don't look down at them. Guests. A guest, Achnas Azarchim. Very often we have guests. We invite guests. We don't invite guests who need us being their host. We invite guests who we feel that we can take pride in having. We invite guests who we feel entertained by having. I don't like having a quiet suda. The kids always act up when nobody's around. You know, there's guests. The suda, the Shabbos suda has a little more of a format, and it's, you know, it's a little more. Yeah, you know, I like to have guests. Are we having guests to make use of the guests present, or are we having guests so that we can serve the guests? Parents. Parents could be emergency backup plan. Something goes wrong, call your parents. People who are a little more looking towards the future, parents. They're our retirement plan. Nach 120, we'll be Irish the house. Aniyim. Famous story, a joke they say about the Brisker who very excitedly came running over to his friend one day, right before Purim, and he has this simcha in his eyes, this glee, this excitement like you never saw before, especially on a Brisker's face. And his friend says, "What's up? I know b'senichlis adam adam b'simcha, but it's only a din. You don't really have to." He says, No, you don't understand. I'm really b'simcha this adam. What happened? I found an ani, an evyoin, a meducha, a bal tzaris, a bal yisurim, like you never saw before. I'm so happy. I'm gonna get my mitzvah matanis lavyoinim this year, like gewaldig. Sven says, yeah, you really failed an audience, a real one. You can do it. Yeah. So who is it? Tell me. I want to listen to the mitzvahs. Are you crazy? I'm not giving away my mitzvah to you. I want to save him for next year too. This kid is gonna get too rich. You could look at an ani as being your chefza the mitzvah. Who is he? He's a guy that I get my mitzvahs with. Some people take covet in ani. You know, they bring the ani inside and they watch how the ani has to talk and beg them for money. You know, they take their time, it's not a lot of covet, you know, sit there very slowly, write out the check, you know, watch him starving, waiting, rushing to try to go to the next door. If we are addicted to looking at everybody from a relative point of view, I'm just going to read you a Ramban and tell you how we should look at them from a relative point of view. Geras Ramban. V'chol adam yihyeh gadol mimcha be'einecha. You want to look relatively at people? No problem. Look at them relative to you. But not you being the center and them being a tafel. V'chol adam yihyeh gadol mimcha be'einecha. Faket. Look at people from a relative point of view. We don't mind that. We're addicted to that. We look at everybody just relative to ourselves. But you know what? They're greater than you. Im chacham ayashiru, if the person is wise or wealthy, alecha lechabdoi, respect him for his wealth, respect him for his wisdom. Im rashu, if he's poor, va'ata ashir, and you're the rich one, ay chacham imenu, or you're the wise one more than him, chashayv belibka, you should think in your heart, ki ata chayev imenu. If you're more capable, you have more money to do more good, or you have more wisdom to be able to do more with. So you're more responsible. And you are more negligent when you're not performing to your best. So you're worse than he is. But who's Akam Imcha? He's better off than you because he lacks the capability. There's not as much demands on him. He's more righteous than you are. Shim hu chayte, if he sins, hu shaygeg, v'at amazed. He's a shaygeg, he's not as wise as you. So your wisdom, you're going to be amazed. That's how we're supposed to look at somebody from a relative point of view. If you want to look at people from a relative point of view, the relative point of view is not how I can use you, but how I can be of service to you. The Chafetz Chaim, in his second marriage, was building his sukkah in the place where he's always built it for 20, 30 years before. And he knows the best location where the sukkah should be, with the sun, the shade, the convenience to the kitchen, and he built the sukkah, and his wife, his new wife, his second marriage, comes out. And she says, Stol Meir, I think the sukkah would be better on this side of the house, in that angle. And the Chafetz Chaim went, and he took down the sukkah, and he rebuilt the sukkah on the other side of the house, even though he knew for 20 years from experience, the first place he put it was the best. The Chafetz Chaim went, took down the sukkah, and rebuilt it on the other side. His wife comes back out again from cooking in the kitchen. She looks at it and says, you know, Stol Meir, Taka, the first place was better. And the Chafetz Chaim went and he took down the sukkah and he rebuilt it in the original place. And he didn't say, I told you so! How can I be of a service to my wife? I'd rather she's an Ezer Kenegdi. But your tachlis as a husband is to make your wife the greatest chesed project. The greatest act of a haftal liyacha kamecha to show the greatest expressions of love. I'm going to end off with just a short saying we heard from a tremendous Talmud Chacham, and I hope that these words will ring. I'm not sure how loud I should say this. It should ring and ring and ring in our hearts. And these words had a profound effect upon how I look at this certain Talmud Chacham. And it had a big effect on my life. And I went to ask this person if I should learn with somebody. Somebody asked me to learn with their son. And this guy was a real battler. And I wasn't being paid for tutoring services. He asked me for a chesed, can I learn with his son? It meant two, three hours a week. It's a big deal. It wasn't easy. But my greatest concern was I knew that with this guy, I'm not going to be doing much learning. This guy was a big schmoozer. A big schmoozer. And such a big schmoozer, you couldn't even redirect the schmoozing back to the learning. You couldn't. And sitting down with the guy for an hour, you'd get him 50 minutes of schmoozing about complete Dvarim Batalim, and maybe get him 10 minutes of learning edgewise. And that's what was killing me the most. I'm going to be giving up 2-3 hours a week. Not going to be paid. This can oilam hazeh. This can oilam haba. This can garnished. For what? To help this guy a little. The 10 minutes of learning maybe will help him. So I went to this Talmud Chacham and I presented the question to him. Should I be giving up 3 hours of my week for Kamat Bittel Torah to possibly help this guy out? And this Talmud Chacham turned to me and he said, Dovi, it's a very hard sign. I can't tell you what to do. But I could tell you my perspective on life. These are his words. Dovi, we're here for service. Yeah, it's going to make you be a bit tired, and you're not going to be getting so much scarf, and it's going to be strenuous and taking up time, and you have to deal with listening to all his mishigasin. Mamish tvarim b'teilim. This guy's 10 years younger than you, you know, immature, and I can't answer what you said. We're here for service. That's what we're here for. Not to make use of people, but to serve people. Have a good night.